Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Pearlman. My guest is Michael Cohen. Cohen is a graduate of Middlesex University in London, England, where he received a degree in society and technology. He is a builder, renovator of homes, and a playground professional. For over 20 years, he worked at the internationally renowned playground company created by architect Bob Leathers, where he helped hundreds of grassroots communities in the United States and overseas create wonderful children's playgrounds. In 2010, Cohen created his own playground company called Must Have Play, which creates wellness playgrounds for elders. And welcome to the show.
It's delightful to be here. Thank you.
Now, you spent many years as a builder and a renovator of homes. What was it that captured your imagination in regard to reimagining spaces and creating spaces? Tell us.
This goes back to something before playgrounds.
Yes,
then.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed, from a young child, watching people who would come to the house, do odd jobs. I would follow them around, ask questions generally, make a pest of myself, I'm sure. and then I would try to pick up tools and tinker and take things apart, try to put them back together. When I started as a teenager looking for odd jobs, I found myself on construction sites as a laborer and picked up various things, and I enjoyed what I was doing. It was fun. I enjoyed the people I was working with and creating. I suppose it was art. I didn't think of it then. I've become perhaps more creative since. When I came to the States, I wanted to learn how to build my own house. So I deliberately set about trying to get hired by a local builder, particularly building a log house. There were very few of them, but I found one. And they hired me, and I learned how to do that. Discovered that it wasn't a good idea after all, but I enjoyed the carpentry and I stayed doing that.
It is creative, and I'm sure you're constantly learning no matter what.
Oh yes, there are new materials, there are new ideas, there are new tools. Been away for it a little while, so whenever I go back to it, yes, I come up with inspiration for different things.
Yeah,
and I spread from building houses to artwork or furniture and not just wood, but metal, concrete.
Yes, I must tell my listeners I've been to Michael's house and he is very creative. His artwork is really intriguing. I've seen some of it. Yeah, and the beautiful house you built is really gorgeous as well. Now, tell us how you connected with the architect Bob Leathers and started working on playgrounds. Was that something that you learned from him, or had you had it in your mind? Playground sounds like an intriguing field to go into.
No, it was totally by accident. I had not given playgrounds any thought since I was about 10. So Bob Leathers, some of your listeners may know, was quite a trailblazer in the world of children's playgrounds. He, too, got into it by accident. He was a successful architect of houses and commercial architecture, and helped volunteers create a playground for his son at his son's school here in Ithaca, the old Henry St. John School. This was in the 70s. Well, it was such a success that another school said, "Do you think you can do one for us?" And very quickly, he was on the way to becoming a trailblazer nationally and internationally. And I think he's responsible for two different aspects of the business. One is connected play, whereby instead of having a separate swing set and then next to it roundabout and next to that teeter-totter or a seesaw, he would connect them. So without really touching the ground, you could go by way of monkey bars or a balance beam or these maze-like structures from one event to another, connected play.
Uh-huh.
He also, coming from that first experience of working with volunteers, parents of other children at the school, discovered that he enjoyed working with volunteers, and so all of his playgrounds are what became called community built, whereby a community itself, whether it's at a school or in a public park, mobilize all the resources at their disposal, local builders, local merchants, the local high school shop class, homeowners.
Wow.
They raise the money, they recruit volunteers, they seek donations of services and materials, all of these things. And then in 5 days, or maybe six, they come together for a barn raising, and it's a playground raising. All of the elements that they need have been organized, are in place when we would arrive. So there'd be a couple of truckloads of materials. There'd be a big 18-wheeler trailer, stock full of materials and nuts and bolts and hardware and tools and wheelbarrows and what have you. There'd be a big tent where we'd serve volunteers. There'd be a whole slew of volunteers who would show up at 8 o'clock in the morning, and for three shifts a day for 5 days, somewhere in the region of 1,000 people would come through. And God,
it sounds like such an old-fashioned, indeed a barn-raising kind of situation. And was it all written down how this was to be constructed, or were you able to use your creativity and come up with innovative ideas?
Well, by the time I joined him, he had been at it for a few years, and he was doing 100 or so of these projects a year. So he had systematized it to some degree, although there was a lot unwritten and a lot was word of mouth and a lot you learn on the job. And much of it was judgment, so that when someone would bring me a team of volunteers, two or three strangers, you'd have to try to sum them up in using all of your senses and your gut and say, what's the best job to give them? And sometimes you'd get it right. Sometimes you'd get it wrong. You hoped that if it was wrong, they didn't do too much damage to them or anyone else. And
yeah, I'll bet safety is a huge factor in all of these playgrounds, and including the ones that we're going to be talking about soon that you have started to create.
Well, yes, safety during construction, and of course,
right,
very much so safety of the finished playground. Mm-hmm. And that bit has become, since the, 1970s or so, in this country, an industry unto itself, playground safety.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Now, after 20 years of designing children's playgrounds, you decided to segue into something different, not totally different. So you created Must Have Play in 2010, and you started thinking about and imagining playgrounds for elders. Tell us where you got this idea.
You'll laugh, but it was from Good Morning America.
I'm laughing.
I saw a short snippet, a video, came to my attention, as many things do, from Google. And it was about a playground opening in Manchester, England. You know I'm from England. So because it was playgrounds, and I'm a junkie of playgrounds, and England, I checked it out, not knowing quite what it was. Well, it turns out it was, they called it a playground for seniors, or a seniors playground. Mm-hmm. And they said, this is the first in England, and it's intended for seniors, pensioners, senior citizens, words I don't often use, but that's what they were saying. This was back in 2010. And they showed an outdoor setting, about half a dozen or so outdoor exercise machines, things you might sort of see in a gym, but these were intended to be used outdoors, and a handful of people playing. And I say playing because although they were exercising, there were a couple of things that struck me. They were having fun, and they were in many cases face to face, doing the same exercise on the same machine. It was intended for two or more people. Sometimes one of the people was the interviewer. Sometimes it was another local person playing. And part of the fun was their social interaction.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, this is brilliant. This is amazing. I've never heard of such a thing. And it set me on a quest to learn more about its history. Who made this? Who designed it? Where did it come from?
Yeah.
And that led
and
me on a
journey. There's obviously a philosophy behind it, right? I mean, I read that the Chinese and the Japanese were doing these kinds of things and have been for many years. Was it an entirely different idea than the idea, like outdoor gyms, which is what you sort of described from Manchester?
I think it's a different tradition that has come to this point in China and Japan. They and I'm no expert, but they have a different regard for elders. Mm-hmm. It's a cultural difference.
It's more respectful.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
so. There's a respect for elders' wisdom and value.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not as prevalent, let me put it kindly, here in the West. So there's that tradition. They also have a different Eastern tradition of health and wellness, which is more holistic and not medication-based or mm-hmm. symptom-based, but wellness. And that includes exercise, and many of the martial arts, Tai Chi that we see, are about exercise and physical fitness, having and also related to energy flows and spiritual well-being.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what we forget in the West, too. We think the body and the mind are separate.
We do.
Yeah,
we do.
Yeah.
It's our loss, I think. People who visited China, I've met subsequently when I talk about this, tell me that it was very easy to get up in the morning, go out for a walk, and see many people in public parks doing Tai Chi or just walking and talking, something I'd love to promote and see more of here.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's their tradition. Now, in China, in addition to that, in the late 90s, as they were planning for their Olympics, they used that occasion to promote physical wellness and exercise, and which means, for example, they invested a lot in gymnasiums and parks and outdoor exercise. And they started actually making exercise courses, exercise machines. I think the Japanese were doing this around the same time. But this is only 20 years ago at most,
mm-hmm.
at most, not long ago. About the same time, a little later perhaps, you started seeing a similar development in Europe, independent, I think. And it came more from playground manufacturers and universities and professional parks and recreation departments. And I'm thinking of Germany, Switzerland, Scandinavia.
So you were trying to draw all these traditions that had been cropping up and still in process and bring it to the U.S. and bring it to your idea of your new company, which is going to create playgrounds for elders.
Exactly. I saw a lot I liked, a lot that inspired me, some things I thought, I hope this doesn't sound immodest, but I could improve upon because I didn't just want to design and see outdoor gyms.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me, yeah.
A sterile sort of space. It'll work for some people. Certainly having getting outdoors is helpful in itself. And for those people that don't mind just climbing onto a machine and in public, that's good. And it's freely available. Why not? But for most elders, especially, I think, a space needs to be more appealing than that mm-hmm. and offer more.
Mm-hmm. And so you were thinking about a space where people can interact, exercise, and also probably be alone, right? I mean, a place to be outside and be alone.
Either to be alone and to enjoy being alone, whether it's because there's silence or there might be birds or butterflies or mm-hmm. fragrances of flowers or perhaps sculpture or water features. You know, these are elements that are commonly found in lovely gardens. And that's a tradition I think I bring from England.
Yeah,
I'm not a gardener. And you've been to my house; you could vouch for that. But I love gardens, and I like formal and informal gardens. Mm-hmm. I love fountains and conversational seating areas and flower beds and picnic areas.
Well, this
and
is perfect.
Shelters.
This is a perfect idea for elders. I don't know why anybody hasn't thought of this before. You know, I used to go to rest homes where my grandparents were, and there were just these little concrete, almost like backyards with nothing in them where you could just, I think people were smoking then, you know, that kind of atmosphere. So this is amazing to me.
Yes,
it's taken so long.
There are a number of landscape architects and designers who specialize in horticultural therapy, healing gardens, and are working very well to improve the way we look at the outdoor spaces of our wellness institutions, hospitals, senior living centers of various types, and our parks. So I like them too. I like to work with them too.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Michael Cohen. We're talking about his playground company called Must Have Play, which creates wellness playgrounds for elders, which I can't believe it's a concept that has just sort of come into being. So traditionally, kids want sandboxes and swing sets and places to, you know, rough themselves up and maybe, you know, get hurt. So what's the different thought process in regard to elders? I would assume they want kind of a clean space in a space that isn't going to have obstructions. And so talk to us about the philosophy.
Yes. When I start designing a space for elders, the location is important in a number of ways. If it's at a residence, then usually it's accessible on foot, of course, and it's relatively private. If it's in a public park, it might be too far away to walk to. It might be too open and exposed, where especially more frail elders may feel a little bit intimidated.
Mm-hmm.
Or on the other side of the coin, it may be too public, which is also a bit intimidating. So you want a combination of certain amount of privacy, but at the same time, not too far away in case you need help. So you balance these things. In terms of what's there after you've picked up on a site, well, we're trying to encourage the basic exercises which go to daily living, like preventing falls, promoting better balance, endurance, general muscle tone, flexibility, stretching, mobility,
mm-hmm.
and then cardiovascular exercise. We're not doing weight training. We're not trying to become bodybuilders. But we are, you know, these are the beneficial outcomes we're looking to promote. At the same time, we want to do it in a way that offers the chance, if not encourages, social interaction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we look for ways where if you're exercising, you might be doing it face-to-face with somebody else. Not necessarily like a seesaw where there has to be someone.
Yeah, yeah.
But someone else could join in the same place and be doing the same thing. You may meet a friend. You may go with a friend. Even the benches, we like to put in curved benches so that instead of sitting side by side looking straight out, you're angled towards one another.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So
do you generally have these designed so that there has to be a caretaker out there or somebody giving them guidance to seniors, especially in regard to the exercise?
No, these are
independent
and unsupervised. However, I do like to encourage caregivers or therapists to go with their clients or their
patients,
their patients,
yeah, yeah,
and introduce them to something that might otherwise be rather new.
Yeah, yeah.
My feeling is that once people see and touch and use what's there, it doesn't take further encouragement or explanation. There are no weights to change. There are no springs or belts. To the extent people are working against weight, it's their own weight and gravity.
Uh-huh.
So
you don't have machines in these things, too, like we were talking about the gym atmosphere?
Oh, no, there are some. There are some, absolutely, yes.
Uh-huh.
No, there are some manufactured elements, but without weights and so on.
So they basically just would have to turn it on, right?
Not even electric. No, oh. Nothing to turn on. No, these are very simple ways to get people moving.
Okay.
You know, the way that you might think of a chin-up bar being a machine, only a little bit different, you know.
I see. Or they could just hop on an exercise bike and just start pedaling.
There might be some pedals. You're familiar with the film The Karate Kid?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So there's a scene which most people know about where the instructor has the boy put wax on his car. And first it's a circular motion one way, then it's a circular motion the other way. Well, there are machines that can encourage that turning a wheel like a giant drummer's cymbal. We call them Tai Chi wheels. And And when you turn them, they're large. They may be 2 feet across. You're moving your arm and your shoulder. Well, it's very simple to use. Mm-hmm. But what you're doing is exercising your shoulder.
Yeah.
And these kinds of aids, which can be fun.
And it's so, you know, these simple ways of doing exercise, people forget that how beneficial they are.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people think you have to go run a marathon in order to stay fit. I mean, a lot of younger people think that.
No, well, you don't. Bless people who can run. I've never enjoyed it. But there are other ways to get some beneficial cardiovascular, get the blood flowing and the heart pumping. It's good to do. There are no end of studies that can demonstrate the healthful effects of exercise. But we want to make it enjoyable. We don't want to make it seem like it's a workout.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are other reasons to be there, so that if you want to just sit and talk or read, that's great. You know, I don't think our parks are as appealing as they could be, especially for
you're talking about parks in general.
Public parks.
So tell us, where have you created some of these spaces? Are there any places here in Ithaca that you could talk specifically about?
No,
or in the region?
No, not yet. We are too new yet. We still are in the front end of our pipeline. And I'm a bit frustrated. I haven't built any yet. I've designed several. And I've spoken to a lot of people around the country about doing this. I'm off next week to begin the design process for another one. This will be in Indiana. I'm hoping they'll build. But I think it's true to say I'm not a natural-born entrepreneur. So this is a concept I've developed, I feel passionate about. But there's a bit of a step from there to closing deals and building.
Yeah.
And it's a divide I've yet to get across, but I'm still very confident.
I think it's a great idea, and I think it would be so beneficial to people, to especially have an aesthetic place for exercise, socializing, instead of just throwing people out to a yard like I was talking about earlier, which I see so often, and especially in some of those elder care places, you know?
That's how I remember.
I think it would have to do, I think it would be good for health.
Oh, yes. Well, I believe that the boomer generation, in which I include myself, demand better. We know better, we demand better, we expect better, we're going to pay for better. And so there's pressure from us. And we know the benefits of health. My father thought that when you get to be a certain age, everything declines, and that's about the way it goes. Well, we're not talking about reversing aging. We're actually respecting aging. But it's also true that if you exercise and use what you have, you can preserve much more independence and stave off a lot of chronic diseases that we face. And so...
Well, I think it would also be beneficial for the socializing part, because so many elders are still lonely and they don't want to just go sit in front of a stranger and eat in a cafeteria kind of setting, right?
Right.
I mean, to meet somebody in a garden would be so much less intimidating.
And that's, you know, you talk about going to a cafeteria, that's if you live in a community residence.
Yeah.
That only covers about 10% of elders.
Uh-huh.
90% or so in this country stay at home, which means they end up living alone. Now, there are a number of movements that you can discern which are beginning to change that, where 3 or 4 or 5 friends may purchase a house to live in on their own as they age. It's just beginning. These are germs of ideas. But still, most people are not going to be living in a community residence, specially built residence like an assisted living facility.
Yeah, yeah, like a Kindle or what in a place like that, yeah. What about in regard to these spaces that you envision in weather like ours? You know, I mean, we have so many months where it's too cold to go outside or it's snowing. How do you account for that? Are you going to have covers that you can...
This comes down to the budget and the location. Certainly, you could put a lot of what I've been describing indoors. especially if it's an indoors like a conservatory where you have natural daylight.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a heated floor. We could put, you know, but I don't want to overstate that. And that can be very expensive. And of course, unless it's fairly protected at a candlelight situation, it's going to be destroyed pretty quickly too, I would think. Now, you can put it under an open roof, like a pavilion, where at least it's protected from rain. But that still makes it cold and windy. Shelter may be good for heat shade too. But no, in much of the country, certainly here, it won't be used a good deal of the year. For me, that just puts a premium on optimizing the opportunities when the weather permits.
Yeah.
It isn't a reason to do nothing. It's a reason to make sure that when, in those 4 or 5 months when the weather is favorable here, that the opportunity to get outdoors and enjoy the outdoors and take advantage of a beautiful park or two in the neighborhood and get a little exercise. We haven't talked about games either, like outdoor games like bocce or some sort of adaptation of basketball or ping pong.
So you envision that for some of these elder playgrounds too? I can imagine that, sure.
There are a lot of people, I think I'm one, who will be motivated to go outdoors if there is a little competition, like a little, you know, have a team that plays bocce and get out and play.
And people do that when they go on vacations, and then they totally forget about it when they're home.
There are actually a couple of bocce courts here. There's one at Stewart Park. It'd be lovely to see them more used.
Yeah. But I can picture these elder spaces having all these little opportunities in one space. See, that, to me, sounds like the key motivation.
Yes, right, and not stretched out. One of the traditions that we didn't talk about is the parcours, which comes from Switzerland, and it's exercise stations that are spaced every 100 meters or so along a hiking trail. There's the vestiges of one here along the inlet at Cass Park. Those are spread out. We want to cluster them so we bring people closer together so they can socialize.
Yeah. Well, Michael Cohen, we're almost out of time. Can you give people some contact information so they can get in touch with you and maybe you can find somebody to collaborate with on this?
Yes. I'd love to hear from anyone who's interested in knowing more about this. The best place to start is at my website, which is musthaveplay.com.
Uh-huh.
Musthaveplay.com, and then they can contact me through that.
Okay. Well, Michael Cohen, good luck with this. I think this is an absolutely idea whose time has come. So I hope people will take you up on this, and these will start growing and becoming reality in our community and as well as the rest of the country, which really needs it too. The company is called Must Have Play, and my guest has been Michael Cohen. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outoboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.